This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. It was about 2 years ago when state policymakers started paying more attention to a new emerging contaminant class, PFAS, which was showing up in wells and drinking water across Wisconsin. Now the DNR is investigating more than 100 sites of PFAS contamination across the state. Joining us today are two state policymakers who have known PFAS contamination in water in their districts, Senator Melissa Agard, Democrat from Madison, and Senator Eric Wimberger, Republican from Green Bay. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So we did show quickly a slide with some definition of PFAS. I want to show that again. So just for people that aren't familiar, PFAS, per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, they are manufactured chemicals. They're used in products like clothing, carpet, nonstick cookware, packaging, firefighting foam. People generally have contact with them throughout their life. Very difficult to break down, if not impossible. They're called forever chemicals. They accumulate in the human body over time, and they show up in our water. We continue to learn more about them and their health concerns, but they have been linked to reproductive issues and certain types of cancer. So that's the basis of the concern. Senator Wimberger, some of the worst PFAS contamination in your district in Marinette.
Yes.
And that's tied to the Tyco firefighting facility where there was testing of firefighting foam. What does day-to-day life look like for residents in your area that live in that impacted area?
Well, I'd say there's two kind of separate categories there of people affected by PFAS. There are those who were in the direct pollution plume from Johnson Controls, so they would spray the firefighting foam on the ground, and it created a would go down to the aquifer and kind of spread out, making its way towards the bay. And so there's people in that direct pollution plume, and they are going to be embroiled in this litigation going on with Johnson Controls currently. And the second group of people are going to be those that took biosolids from the wastewater facility, and they're out in the farm fields. And so their problems are distinct in that one is close enough to pipe water and possibly, and the others are too far away. So some have wells, and town of Peshtigo still people have wells, but at least their problems or their prospective solutions are a little different.
Are those people able to drink their water?
No, they aren't. They get bottled water. I think there's some advisories about, showering and stuff like that with it. Some people have filtration systems. The city of Marinette, to my understanding, even though Johnson Controls was willing to pay for it, denied access to the municipal water through the pipes. And I think that's kind of right on the front of the issue right now up there.
So as you say, people still embroiled in the situation for the most part.
Right. I can't say there's a whole lot of movement on it other than the settlement recently, but some people didn't take advantage of that.
So as we mentioned at the start of the show, Marinette and Peshtigo area, one of really 100 sites across the state that the DNR is tracking, investigating PFAS being detected in drinking water in the towns of Peshtigo and the town of Campbell and French Island, in the cities of Marinette, Eau Claire, Wausau, La Crosse, and Madison. We know that some people, as you mentioned, are drinking bottled water. Some wells have been shut down in those communities, including in Madison. Senator Agard, you have PFAS contamination that is associated with the airport and a military site at Truax. Is Wisconsin, behind other states in terms of kind of addressing PFAS contamination?
You know, it certainly would be lovely if we could point to the federal government having come up with definitions and standards on how it is that we can address something that we know is a problem. Frankly, industries have known that PFAS has been a forever chemical, a poisonous chemical, for quite some time. And it is egregious that we haven't taken steps to address this before. We have communities that kids are learning that the water that comes out of their tap is poison. People are afraid to bathe their babies in the water in their homes.
That's happening in your district?
That happens in I've heard people in my district say that they're worried about the water that's coming out of their tap, but we are not the most impacted. Certainly, there are other communities that are impacted more strongly, and as Senator Wingberger pointed out, there are people that are drinking bottled water. We are not receiving the bottled water from the DNR in the same way within our district, but we've had to shut wells down. We've had to figure out how it is that we are going to get water to people and how it is that we're going to remediate. And Dane County, the City of Madison, the Air Force Base, we have had leaders at the table trying to figure out how to best remediate and mitigate the concerns of PFAS here in Madison. And that's been part of my motivation to be working on addressing this with statewide policy, because we aren't seeing the federal government step up and provide us with these standards. And Wisconsin has been a leader in many ways over the years, and this is another opportunity for us to come up with the most comprehensive and best standards to address it here at the state level.
Senator Wimberger, where do you think Wisconsin stands if we look at our neighboring states? There's more comprehensive testing in neighboring states. There's some standards in our neighboring states in Michigan, in Illinois. Where do you put Wisconsin in terms of our status?
Well, at least partially now at the 70 part per trillion standard with the EPA. Chapter 160 describes that groundwater at least should be in line with whatever that federal standard is. The EPA standard is more advisory, not a requirement. I think a lot of the obstacles in Wisconsin as far as setting a standard are a compilation of requirements within the code, but also the fact that there was no emergency order and it took so long to create a standard, doing the rule promulgation process. So when it came time to, for instance, filing a lawsuit, you can't make someone remediate something that isn't regulated or determined regulated, I suppose. And how can you declare something a serious substance if Wisconsin hasn't itself declared a serious substance or puts it on itself on farm fields, for instance? There's a whole kind of confluence of legal problems, I think, that create a quagmire. We're kind of where we are now with five, six years in of seriously looking at the issue and not even a rule.
Is there someone to blame for that?
I think it's just, I think the DNR should have teed it up better, but that's me speaking as an attorney, that they didn't do the legwork needed to make it pass. If you pass rules and it's not done through the right administrative process, then anybody who cares to challenge it can do so and say it violates their due process rights or violates the equal protection clause or something like that. So you gotta have your data and everything lined up for when 3 years later it gets in front of the Natural Resources Board. You know, everything is squared away the way it needs to be squared away.
So the process wasn't followed the way it should have been. We could have been further along, I think, is what you're saying.
In my opinion. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, there's relying on what happened on the 23rd of February is
there at was... At the Natural Resources Board.
Right, there was some attempted reliance on maps, but the maps weren't created based on actual well testing or actual testing of soil. So there's just too many unknowns there. So you have to have whenever there's a regulation like this, you have to have a rational relationship established between the problem and the government rule. So while it seems intuitive that there would be that rational relationship, you still have to go through that step. And I think that was kind of an obstacle for it.
Senator Agar, do you feel more of a sense of urgency, or do you think that it was important for a process to be followed?
Well, we've been trying to have a process for quite some time. The governor has included a PFAS action plan here in Wisconsin that has been not taken up by the majority party. There's been bipartisan work in previous sessions by Senator Wingberger's predecessor to address PFAS contamination that hasn't made it across the finish line in the legislature. I've introduced a bill, the most comprehensive, we believe, PFAS bill in the nation, the CLEAR Act, giving Wisconsin the opportunity to be a leader, working with scientists in highly impacted communities. It's devastating that we have people that are not able to drink water in their homes. It is devastating that there are communities that are riddled with health disorders and diseases. I see it very much. My job as a member of the government to ensure that our constituents, that our communities and our natural environment is safe. And I believe that we are not doing our jobs in providing the best safety and security for our citizens by having partisan bickering when in previous sessions we've been able to get past that.
Senator Wimberger, you've been critical of the governor and the DNR for the spreading of biosolids. Mm-hmm. You've put out several statements, and you talk about how they had been allowing the spreading of biosolids at a rate significantly higher, 150,000 parts per trillion with PFAS in biosolid spreading compared to proposing 20 parts per trillion for groundwater standard. Why is that concerning, and what should the regulation for biosolid spreading be?
Well, first of all, I mean, a lot of the wells on the farm fields pop above, 200 parts per trillion, 50 feet down into the ground, 100 feet down in the ground because of the biosolid spreading. So to continue it as late as November of last year, I was shocked by it, and that's what my response was about. But it also has a secondary ripple effect, is that you have Attorney General Call started a lawsuit against Johnson Controls related to the Spills Act, Section 292, and you have to establish there as part of the burden of proof that it's a serious concern to health. There's a few couple standards there. So if you're going to say that PFAS is a serious harm, it affords people who want to defeat a lawsuit the opportunity to say, well, not by the state of Wisconsin's own actions. They want to establish these standards, but here they are putting 100, 150,000 parts per trillion on farm fields, 30 miles from our facility. And, oh, by the way, the soil at the Johnson Controls facility actually tests at about 120,000 parts per trillion. And then obviously there's more going on in the groundwater. But currently the soil samples are testing at that. So it just, when the actions that Wisconsin takes don't line up with the arguments in front of judicial proceedings, that's what's complicating all of these things.
And just to clarify, biosolid spreading is the spreading of water from wastewater treatment plants that might have PFAS contamination. And Senator Agard, are you concerned about the spreading of biosolids?
Absolutely. I'm concerned about the spreading of biosolids, but I believe very much that if we stopped PFAS from being used and getting into the environment, then they wouldn't be in the biosolids that would be spread on our land. If we were allowed the bill that Senator Coles put through and that I was honored to be able to work with him a session ago, that ended up being broken apart through administrative rules that would address firefighting foam, that would get some PFAS out of use, the CLEAR Act and other pieces of legislation. If we can, we need to make sure that we're not shifting our focus from eliminating and minimizing the use of PFAS. That would have a direct impact on these biosolids.
You're saying start at a different point.
We need to start at a different point. But additionally, farming is an agricultural heritage is a big part of our state, and there are going to be biosolids just part of our citizenry. And when we have communities that don't have places to put their biosolids, we're going to ship them to another state. It turns into a real tragedy for these local governments when they're calling the DNR and they don't know what to do with them. They're spilling over.
Sounds like there's some agreement that we need to figure out what happens with biosolids.
Yeah, I think we would both agree that we need to move away from PFAS. it's going to work its way through a system. So they treat the water at a municipality, and it's probably going to be that way for a while yet, because it's it's out there in the ether, and it'll get boiled down, and then they kind of store these biosolids in a facility. Eventually that place gets filled up and they got to do something with it. So there are cities like Marinette that actually now send it to Oregon because it's the only landfill that will take PFAS laden biosolids, but other municipalities don't have the budget to do that, or aren't willing to, raise taxes or whatever to take care of that. So I think that's certainly a, a place we could probably find some common ground because it's an easy practical kind of a dynamic.
All right, and we accomplished one bipartisan goal today.
And I would say shipping all, you know, Oregon not being a community within Wisconsin, but the state of Oregon, we're shipping
all the way
the biosolids all the way across the country, which again that's not sustainable.
Sure. You brought up the February Natural Resources Board hearing where there were some standards that were moved forward. So the State Natural Resources Board approved a proposed rule for PFAS for surface water standards. They modified a drinking water standard, and they rejected a rule for groundwater standards. There was some testimony in that hearing from some constituents from your area, Senator Wimberger, specifically from a woman who's very active on this issue, Town of Peshtigo Chair, Cindy Boyle. She said, "We need you to set standards to move it to the next phase. Do your part, please. We are all drinking wells in the town of Peshtigo. One-third of our parcels are impacted, 4,000 people. It continues to migrate. If we don't have state standards, there's nothing that we can do to hold a responsible party accountable to provide us safe drinking water." So she's talking about the one-third of Wisconsin residents who get their water from private wells. Should Wisconsin have a groundwater standard to protect the water for those one-third of Wisconsinites?
I do, and I think that when you looked at the surface water vote, it was kind of, they were looking at each other to see who would make the amendment to switch it to 70 parts per trillion rather than 20. My reading of what went on there is that they probably all would have agreed to the 70 parts per trillion for the groundwater as well, but instead, I don't think there was an amendment attempted there. Might have been wise to make a motion to reconsider or something.
That's what
that
you would have recommended?
At that point.
They maybe
moment,
could have
but,
gotten there?
For me, the idea of what the groundwater standard should be is not the issue, because there should be one set, or surface water, because there should be one set. It's that after it's set, what do we do with the people who are falling outside of that standard? Because you are an emitter of a pollutant once one single molecule comes off your property. So if you have a farmer who took biosolids and the PFAS is going down into the water table and it's migrating to their neighbor's property, now they're an emitter and they're subject to remediation orders, which essentially devalues their property to zero because nobody's going to buy a property that's subject to DNR remediation orders. So for me, the problem is not whether there should be a groundwater standard. It's looking then how do we help these people out of this jam that's going to naturally occur when they're out of compliance immediately.
So the standards may be the first step, the easier step. One of the standards that they set, that which I'm sure affects a lot of the people who live in the city of Madison in your district, is that drinking water standard, which was modified, as we said. It's three times higher than what was recommended by public health officials at the Department of Health Services. The Department of Health Services had recommended 20 parts per trillion. This one, which is before the legislature for consideration now, it's 70 parts per trillion. Is that a safe standard for drinking water?
Well, I'm not a scientist, but I trust scientists. And when our public health officials and our scientists are making a recommendation of 20, I think that we need to be taking that very seriously, and we should be landing at that spot. I also, as I said earlier, very much believe that we need to be investing more finances and research and time into PFAS and understanding it's an emerging conversation. You listed off a whole lot of communities that have tested hot for PFAS. That list is going to continue to grow, not only in Wisconsin, but across our nation. And we need to take this very seriously because we're seeing increased numbers of amounts of cancer in our communities. People are not able to drink out of their taps. These are very concerning. And when our scientists are saying, and they're waving flags and saying that we need to do something about this, I get concerned when partisans step in and say, well, I don't agree with 20. I want 70. The public health officials said 20. I think that's where we should have landed.
Do you agree with 70 parts per trillion for drinking water?
I have no idea what's appropriate. But I think watching that Natural Resources Board debate there, I think the debate was really over whether they were going to be bound by Section 160 and the 70 part per trillion standard the EPA has, or whether it was advisory. And then if they're not bound by the 70 part per trillion as required by the statute, then has the DNR gone through the the phases of investigation and determinations that are set forth in the statute in absence of a federal standard being available. So I think the people who are arguing for 70 parts per trillion are not trying to step in as like scientists. I think they were looking at the statute and saying that if there's a federal standard, they're actually bound to impose the federal standard, which is 70 parts per trillion as far as they could best tell. But then again, the EPA standard is advisory and not mandatory. So I think there was just a lot going on there beyond any sort of concept of whether one thing or another is good or bad. I think it was a legal battle going on. Plus, there was a question of whether the actual cost was going to be over $10 million, and there's some hiccup there as far as being able to even make a standard.
So other states have gone lower than that federal EPA advisory. Is there something that prevents Wisconsin from deviating from that, or do you think that it's important for us to align with the federal standard?
As far as my reading of Section 160, I forget the particular paragraph or decimal point, but it does require that the state of Wisconsin impose whatever the federal standard is.
So until that changes, that's what...
Yeah, and it's not specific to PFAS, but it's specific to all groundwater pollutant issues. So if we do end up changing that statute in some way, it's going to have other ripple effects in different ways. But as far as those people in front of the Natural Resources Board that day, that statute existed, and that was what it appeared to me what was the controlling issue.
Moving on to your discussion around remediation and the cost of remediation, which is being considered in court. In April, a Waukesha County judge ruled that the DNR must develop a rule that identifies PFAS as a hazardous substance before they can require businesses to participate in the cleanup or the remediation of PFAS contamination. Do you agree with that ruling?
I don't. I think that Wisconsin can be a leader. I think that we have been leaders in other ways, and that it is really important that we are hearing from people that are most impacted by the PFAS in their communities. This is about the health and safety, the life and longevity of people within our communities, and we can step up and we can do better. And I don't think that saying that because the feds have set our standards at one level that we are handicapped and we can't move any farther. In fact, I think there is fear within our local communities because we do not have adequate standards, because we haven't passed the CLEAR Act, we haven't moved forward with how it is that we're going to address these contaminants, that local governments are afraid to even test or open the store because they don't know what that's going to mean for their constituents, their budgets, and their communities. And everyone should know whether or not they have clean and healthy drinking water.
Was that Waukesha County ruling the right way to go and move forward?
He was going by law. Everybody has their role, legislature, judiciary, executive branch. So the judge said, look, how can you order someone into remediation to get below a standard when there is no standard set? That's kind of the effect of it. So that the spills law, 292, says that anything can be a hazardous substance. The DNR just has to prove it's a hazardous substance. But and then anybody who spills a hazardous substance has to report it. And I suppose a PFAS could be determined a hazardous substance without a particular PFAS statute. And that's what Josh Call is doing to Johnson Controls right now, because Johnson Controls had actually self-reported, which kind of means that they were only reporting because they thought it was a hazardous substance, you know what I mean? So the litigation up in Marinette is a little bit different than what happened in Waukesha in that regard. But for what happened in Waukesha, even if they were to prove it was a hazardous substance, after that, what do you tell them to what level do you tell them to remediate to? And I think that was the question, why it failed.
And that question came up in the February Natural Resources Board hearing, too. We want to show a little bit of that testimony talking about the impact on businesses and what is their responsibility to remediate. Specifically, we heard from Wisconsin's largest business lobby, Scott Manley from Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, testified saying, despite knowing that they had previously forced a manufacturer in our state to spend nearly $1 million to treat PFAS in water from a construction site dewatering project and a similar construction site dewatering project in Dane County, County DNR staff inexplicably estimated that there would be no cost associated with removing PFAS from construction site. Again, they know good and well because they force businesses to do this, and they know how much was spent on treatment. WMC says that DNR's estimates of the cost to remediation, the cost to business, are too high. They're too low. They're not accurate. What is a fair way, Senator Agard, for Wisconsin to be regulating and requiring remediation, and what's the cost?
Well, I very much believe that polluters need to pay for the pollution that they've created. We know that folks have known about the harm that PFAS can cause to communities and have continued to manufacture and produce PFAS. They've continued to enter into our communities. And at the same time, packing away profits. Those companies need to be held accountable for what it is that they have done to our state and to our citizens. And I think that holding them accountable is important. I also think it's important that we fully fund scientists and have the best scientists available within the Wisconsin Department of Revenue, or Department, or DNR, making sure that we are looking at this in the most holistic way possible so that we can remediate. Yes, we have agreed that what is that standard? Even Senator Weinberg, what does 20 mean? I mean, I feel like we're in the spinal tap. We'll go up to 11 if we can, right? You know, we that's not our expertise. But there are people that do have these expertise, and making sure that our environment is protected, that the people that have polluted the environment are being held accountable is vitally important. So that, you know, we are all dependent on having clean, healthy, fresh water, whether it's coming out of our tap, whether it's the water that's feeding our livestock that we are eating, whether it's the water that's going into the produce that we are feeding our families. This is all very, very important, and that's why coming up with a policy like the CLEAR Act, so that we are investing in science and we are holding the industry accountable for what it is that they have done to our communities is important. And as legislators, I find it very concerning that we're leaning on the courts to solve these problems for us as opposed to coming together. I think it's clear that both of us agree that there's a problem here.
Senator Weinberger, what's at stake for the business community in this remediation conversation?
That's what was getting at, what was being gotten to in that statement was a $10 million standard and how the DNR was approaching that $10 million. And that's required in order to make a rule. Otherwise, they have to send it directly to the legislature. So to get beneath that $10 million threshold is a significant thing. And how they were creating that makes a difference, because if someone does want to challenge the rule, they're going to say that you messed up on how you amortized all this stuff. So the there's a genuine question. That's why things end up in the courts a lot of times. So the things that the DNR were doing were saying, well, municipalities, it's going to cost a municipality X millions of dollars to create a new facility to get their standard below 20 parts per trillion. But they're going to amortize that out 40 years, so therefore the actual cost is only such and such for a 2-year period, and they just added that up. And there's a bona fide question as to whether the actual cost means the total cost added up or the amortized cost over the course of 2 years. And these are the things that were argued that day.
Are important to argue.
In order to maintain the validity of the rule on challenge in a court. And obviously there's a possibility of challenge. So you want to do everything with your I's crossed and T's dotted, you know what I mean? So that was kind of the issue there.
So we've heard some areas of disagreement, an area of potential bipartisan agreement in the area of biosludge. What are some other areas of potential bipartisan agreement? Let's start with Senator Weinberger.
On the tip of my tongue, going into the next session, I think we've got to at least start studying the possibility of landfill sites for PFAS biosolids within the state that municipalities can use, and see if that's even possible. You know, not like say here's a bunch of money to do the thing, but at least study the thing. Nobody wants it in their backyard, but we got to figure out a spot possibly for that. As far as in the city of places like Peshtigo, the town of Peshtigo, we do need to find a way to pipe in water. There's a log jam there with the municipalities of who's going to provide this and pay for it. I think we can figure that out. I think that the places where there's private industry that caused directly into the soil, like Johnson Controls, that's all going to hash out in litigation, and they've actually started with initial settlements on kind of a common law nuisance type of claim. And I think that's all going to shake out, and if not, you know, I'm watching it, obviously. But out in the farms, you've got a completely different ballgame. You can't pipe in water. Imposing any sort of DNR standard is going to require continuous drilling of different wells until they get one that doesn't hit. And so we're probably going to need some help for
and
that.
And money.
And money. If they are running a farm and they can't run the farm anymore, can we do things like solar projects on it to at least reestablish land value, even though they can't have any potable water or agriculture going on?
Do you think you'll get to solutions on those things in the next legislative session?
I have all that kind of in the mix going on right now. I'm genuinely worried about what's going on in the farm fields, because the stuff that went down the pipe into the municipal sewage treatment plants respectively, then the manipulation by the city of the biosolids, it wasn't the industry that told the municipalities to put it on the farm field. So I believe that the courts are going to determine that's called an intervening act, which is going to cut the tie of liability between the sources of pollution and the farm fields. So what it's going to be is the spills law kind of generally applied. I think there's going to be an intervening act issue. And then what about the municipalities that gave out the biosolids? There's actually a sovereign immunity clause in the spills law that prevents any sort of liabilities associated with the cities. So I think the farmers are going to be left holding the bag, and I'm kind of hyper-focused on that.
Senator Agard, where do you see room for bipartisan agreement and goals for the next legislative session?
So I think it's important that we support our municipalities and our local governments. When I talk to my fire chiefs and fire departments across my district, they've worked really hard to remove the PFAS foam from use, but many of them literally have barrels of PFAS foam in their fire stations, and they don't have the resources to remediate that. And even with those resources, many of the places that people would take them aren't taking them because there's so many folks. So I think that providing resources to our municipalities and especially our fire departments is going to be really important. I think also we agree. I heard Senator Wimberger say we shouldn't be manufacturing and working with as many PFAS. So can we set standards for the manufacturing of products and how it is that PFAS are used, whether we're talking about clothes that our babies wear, rugs, furniture, cooking products on the front end, so that we are not having PFAS enter into our environment as much. I think that's an area that we can agree on as well.
Okay. Well, we'll have to bring you both back next session to talk about additional work. Thank you both again today for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Lisa.
Okay. And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. And be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civic broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.